This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have right here in the studio with me Mandy Van Dieven, the founding editor of Elevate Difference and the co-author of a new book out called Hey Shorty, A Guide to Combating Sexual Harassment and Violence in Schools and on the Streets. Mandy Van Dieven, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm very excited to talk about the subject, which I think is really important and doesn't get enough attention. And before we dive right into it, I wanted to just find out a little bit more about yourself and where you grew up and what your background is.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Athens, Georgia, and I went to college in Atlanta. My background is I studied women's studies and sociology as an undergrad and became politically active on my college campus and in the community in Atlanta.
What issues were you dealing with there?
Mostly feminism and women's rights, LGBTQ issues. I was a part of a group that started the first feminist activist group on the Georgia State University campus. And I think at the time, as is probably true for most young people, you know, I was really wanting to go out there and change the world. And then I entered the world and realized it's not that easy.
Was it easy setting up that group on campus, or was that hard too?
It was fairly easy, yeah. The way that the system worked, you could just sort of throw some people together and, you know, start figuring out what projects you wanted to do and figure out what resources the university had to put behind it. So in that sense, it's sort of a miniature, you know, community.
So when you get out into the non-academic world, things were a little different.
Yeah. I mean, things are very different than it is when you're working in a college setting. So, I mean, I think that the first thing that I had to sort of learn is, what the nonprofit world was like and how organizations are funded and, you know, what are the programs that people do and how is the system sort of set up in that way. And at the same time, I started working at Girls for Gender Equity, and they work primarily primarily in elementary and middle schools in the largest school system in the country. So there was a lot of information overload at that point.
How did you arrive there? How did you discover them? How'd they discover you?
Right. So again, like many young activists, I knew that New York City was the center of the universe. And that's where I was, you know, going to go, because that's where all of this sort of radical organizing was going on. And, you know, I got there and realized it's not the center of the universe at all. And it's probably also not as radical as I had imagined at the time. So, you know, I moved there with no job and big dreams and, you know, a big ego, and found my way to Girls for Gender Equity. I started there as a part-time community organizer, and just sort of my position in the organization evolved from there.
And a lot of people listening may not know what Girls for Gender Equity is. I didn't know, frankly, until I picked up the book you've just come out with, Hey Shorty, A Guide to Combating Sexual Harassment and Violence in Schools and on the Streets. So tell me about Girls for Gender Equity.
So Girls for Gender Equity is an nonprofit organization based in central Brooklyn. They work primarily in low-income communities. They initially worked in middle school and elementary schools, but now they also work with high school students. And their mission is to work within the communities to ensure that girls and women can live self-determined lives.
And how long has the group been around?
They started in September of 2001, and they started as an after-school program for middle and elementary school girls, because the New York City public schools sort of allows for each school to operate as autonomous. And that means that instead of the Department of Education providing after-school activities in all of the schools, it's up to the school itself to provide whatever opportunities it offers. So many of the schools were providing after-school sports opportunities for boys and not for girls, and there was an idea that there wasn't an interest. So Joanne Smith, who's the founder and executive director of Girls for Gender Equity, was doing work in the neighborhood at the time, and she started asking community members, do you think girls might want to have a basketball league so that they could go and have some place to play after school? And she found that several parents, teachers, and other organizations doing work in the community said that that was absolutely something they wanted.
Because it seems like it would just be a blatant violation of Title IX if you're not offering the girls in the school the same athletic opportunities you're offering the boys.
Right. Title IX is interesting in that you have to prove that there's an interest that's not being met. So this was the impetus for Joanne starting this program, is she said, well, I'm not going to just sort of go about it in this political way and say, you know, you're not living up to what Title IX says. First of all, she wanted to make sure the interest was there. But second of all, she wanted to make sure that these programs were in place before sort of moving forward in a community organizing way.
Interesting. I'm speaking with Mandy Van Dieven. She is the founding editor of Elevate Difference, and she's talking about a new book, or we're going to get into this new book she's got out with the founder of that organization. And the book is called Hey Shorty, A Guide to Combating Sexual Harassment and Violence in Schools and on the Streets. One of your chapters brings you straight into the public schools there, Paul Robeson High School, right? Is that the name
right.
of the school?
Yes.
I wasn't sure whether it was high school or not. And tell me how that was, because here you are, you know, a tall white woman going to the Paul Robeson High School, which is predominantly African-American. And how were you received, and how did you gain the confidence of the girls there?
Right. So that was our first venture in working with high school students. And we were approached by an after-school program who was already functioning in the school. And they said, you know, we really need to have a program for girls to teach them how to be young ladies.
Which is a quaint expression.
Sure. And, you know, it's also an expression that has a particular cultural history in African-American communities. We went in and said, okay, well, we'll provide this program. But instead of sort of going in with a predetermined curriculum and with an idea of what we thought the girls needed, I instead walked in the door the first day and just had a pen and a blank sheet of paper and said, okay, if we sit down and have a meeting once a week that's only for girls, what do you want for that kind of program? And the girls sort of looked at me like I was crazy. And I had to sort of, let them know that I was really interested in knowing what they wanted and what they needed. And so as soon as they felt like they could share those things, they started throwing out ideas. And they said, we want to talk about relationships. We want to talk about sex. We want to learn about HIV. We want to talk about the fact that there are no places in our community that sell healthy fruits and vegetables. We want to learn how to make money. We want to give back to our community in some way. And so I just sat down and furiously wrote as fast as I could all of the different ideas that they threw out. Went back to Joanne at GGE, said, this is what they said they wanted. Now let's figure out how to make it happen.
And how'd you make it happen?
Well, the first thing that we did was took the ideas that they had given us, and I would do internet research, talk to colleagues, and figure out what were programs that we, or sort of what were workshops that we could run that spoke to those needs. So there's an organization called Girls Inc. that has a comprehensive sex education curriculum. And so I would utilize workshops from that curriculum to do education that way. I also asked them when they said they wanted to do community service or work in their community, what did that mean? What were the issues that were important to them? And domestic violence was one of the issues that they said was important to them. Of course, they wanted to couch that in something that would be fun. So they decided that they wanted to have a fundraiser in their school to raise money for a newly opened domestic violence shelter in their community. And that was a really interesting experience because here I am, you know, in my day-to-day fundraising for this group, and at the same time, they're doing the fundraising for something that, that's important to them as well.
The idea of this dance didn't go over real well with the principal at the beginning. Why was that?
Yeah, no. Well, because Paul Robeson is what they call a scanning school in New York City, which means that there are a lot of incidents of violence within the school walls. There are also a lot of gang affiliations. There are a lot of sort of grudges that people hold against each other for various reasons. So the principal was really afraid that having a after-school gathering within the school could get out of control. And so we entered into a negotiation process where the girls said, well, what do we have to do to convince you that this dance is a good idea? And you do realize that we're doing this dance specifically to raise money for ending violence, right? And so the principal, he really supported the idea, the vision that the girls had. And he said, well, if you can get 10 teachers and school staff to chaperone, if you can hold it directly when school ends so that we don't have to worry about rescanning people and we don't have to worry about keeping people who are not students out of the dance. And so we went through all of these negotiation processes, and finally the principal said, okay, but you can do it in 2 weeks. So the girls were like, all right, we'll do it. You know, we'll take it. And they did. They took it and they ran with it. They created their own tickets to sell. They decorated everything all on their own. They got community businesses to offer donations of food and beverages. And they ended up raising about $500 for the community shelter.
And it sounded like a real success for the girls themselves and made them feel empowered in some sense.
Yeah, I mean, they went from nobody knowing what Sisters in Strength was, that was the name of the program, overnight to everybody saying, ooh, you know, what's this program and how do I get involved in it? So it was a real great time for them to be recognized for their achievements.
And how long were you in that high school then?
We worked in Paul Robeson for 2 years, and at the end of that two-year period, The Sisters in Strength program was sort of outgrowing the school walls and outgrowing the boundaries of what could happen within that one school. So we opened up the internship to be accessible for all teen girls of color throughout all of the boroughs in New York City, because we were also getting phone calls from parents who, you know, maybe their daughter lived in Queens and went to school in Queens or in the Bronx, and they said, we want our daughter to be able to be in your program. At the same time, we were able to secure foundation funding. The Ben and Jerry's Foundation was one of our first funders for the Sisters in Strength program. And we were able to create a program that was a year-long paid community organizing and youth development internship. Also at the same time, Girls for Gender Equity launched a middle school program for both boys and girls called the Urban Leaders Academy, that addressed the social and emotional needs of young people. It provided creative opportunities. It provided health education. So the teen women in the Sisters in Strength program worked within the Urban Leaders Academy to mentor the young people and also to create their own programs that they wanted to run in the middle school.
So a lot of the work that you do and that Girls for Gender Equity does is about empowerment, it sounds like, in leadership building. And one of the obstacles is this problem of sexual harassment. And that seems to have been a focus of your work, too. That's the subject of your new book, Hey Shorty, A Guide to Combating Sexual Harassment and Violence in Schools and on the Streets. Leaving the streets part of it out for the time being, in schools, I mean, how prevalent is it? You did some research. There's some research in this that goes into some of that.
Right. So sexual harassment was a topic that came up again and again, whether it was students telling us about times that they had been sexually harassed or teachers telling us about times they had witnessed sexual harassment and didn't feel properly equipped to intervene, whether that meant that they had not received training within their sort of educational process on how to address the issues, or that they weren't sure that they would be supported by their school administrators or the Department of Education. So we just kept hearing about the issues that people were facing, and it made a lot of sense since the people who were most affected by sexual harassment are the students themselves. It made a lot of sense for them to be the ones who figured out what the need was and how to organize around it. So one of the first stumbling blocks was trying to tell the Department of Education that this was a problem, because all we had was anecdotal evidence. And as far as the Department of Education was concerned, that wasn't enough, because they had other priorities. They were really concerned about the high dropout rate in New York City. They were concerned about the testing, the poor testing scores of some of their schools. And, you know, these are absolutely concerns that they should have. But sexual harassment wasn't making it onto their radar. So the Young Women and Sisters in Strength developed a research project. It was a participatory action research project where they created the methodology and then went, and they were researchers in that they disseminated the surveys that they created. They held focus groups. And then they brought the information back and they analyzed it to come up with an answer to the question of what is the state of sexual harassment in the New York City public schools. And one of the most interesting findings of that research is that although the vast majority of students, when you ask them, is sexual harassment a problem in your school, they said no, they also told you that 1 in 4 students were harassed on a daily basis, and an additional 15% were harassed on a weekly basis. When you started asking them with what frequency do you see people grabbing each other's bodies in a way that's not wanted, in a way that's not flirting, if you ask them about particular behaviors, then they say, oh, this happens all the time. So we realize that sexual harassment is so normalized in the students' everyday lives and really in our culture that it was really hard to convince people that something needed to be done about it.
This normalization process, how did you convince people that, A, you could do something about it, or even prior to A, let's make that B, you could do something about it, but A, you know, this isn't right?
Well, that's an ongoing process, and that was a place where Girls for Gender Equity really had to step back and say, okay, so if we're in a place where people are not even recognizing that this is a problem, although they see it every single day, how do you then work with people so that they can see it and they can do something to change it? So one of the things that Sisters in Strength does in working with both the Urban Leaders Academy students as well as with other teenagers, sometimes with college students as well, is they go into community spaces and schools, and they run workshops that are just basic workshops of what is sexual harassment, how does it happen, what are strategies that can be put in place, both from an individual's perspective, but also in a systemic way to address these issues.
I'm surprised in reading your book, Mandy Van Deven is my guest. She's the author of Hey Shorty, A Guide to Combating Sexual Harassment and Violence in Schools and on the Streets. I was surprised that the schools themselves weren't doing more, because there are laws on the books requiring them to have policies in place And yet, it seems like some of the people, you know, didn't have the policies or didn't post the policies or just wanted to whisk the whole thing under the rug.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about laws and policies is it doesn't stop at simply having them, that there has to be an enforcement body that's holding people and systems accountable for enforcing them. And there really isn't in the New York City public school. One of the ways that is supposed to be in place nationwide, this is not just for New York City, is that each school is supposed to have a Title IX coordinator. And a part of the role of the Title IX coordinator is to go through an annual checklist to make sure the school is in compliance with the federal law on an annual basis. However, most people, when the teen women in Sisters in Strength called schools and said, who's your Title IX coordinator? Most people said, what is Title IX? Sometimes they were hung up on. Sometimes the person sort of pushed them around to somebody else, and then that person pushed them to someone else. So it was a really like an avoidance strategy.
And when you yourself tried to find out who the city Title IX person was, you got the runaround too.
Yeah, and this is so commonplace because people both aren't aware of what the law says and what the requirements are, but they're also, they don't have to be because no one's checking up on them. So one of the things that Girls for Gender Equity does now is they have established a Coalition for Gender Equity in Schools, which is a group of parents, teachers, other organizations, students who attend the New York City public schools, and all of those individuals and groups together are figuring out how to move forward to hold the Department of Education accountable for implementing Title IX.
You know, one of the most disturbing statistics in this book, Hey Shorty, A Guide to Combating Sexual Harassment and Violence in Schools and on the Streets, was a statistic that said of the students who filed a complaint or registered a complaint about being sexually harassed in school, only 1.5% of them thought that the complaint was handled appropriately and that the person that was doing the harassing had been dealt with in a responsible way. Were you surprised by that?
I wasn't surprised by that, but I definitely understand why other people are surprised by that. I think when you're working in the schools, you see what the problems are, and you see what the sort of failings are of the Department of Education. So it wasn't surprising to me, but it is certainly something that we should not be happy about.
And to what extent does that lack of follow-through or lack of taking it seriously by administrators stem from just kind of old ideas, outmoded ways of thinking that, you know, girls should stop taunting boys with their dress or boys will be boys, you know, these old kind of excuses for intolerable behavior?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of that, and I think it contributes to it. I think what's more difficult for people who are working in the schools is because each school is autonomous and because the Department of Education doesn't have an overarching system of accountability, when you speak to, say, a principal of a particular school who absolutely is concerned for the well-being of their students, they'll tell you, you know, I would love to implement these policies, but if I do, all of a sudden my reports of sexual harassment are going to go through the roof and my school's going to be stigmatized. So unless this is done throughout all of the schools in the New York City school system, this is not something I can take on and just do in my school.
So how do you get around that system problem?
That's where the Coalition for Gender Equity in Schools comes in, because there are too many schools for a small organization like Girls for Gender Equity to go it alone. They can't reach the over 1,000 schools in the school system. But what they can do is form alliances with other people who can really figure out ways to create that systemic accountability.
Hmm. And I should make clear, as you do in this book, I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of The Progressive. This is Progressive Radio. Mandy Van Dieven, in your book, Hey Shorty, A Guide to Combating Sexual Harassment and Violence in Schools and on the Streets, it's not just girls and young women who are sexually harassed, that it's boys too.
Right.
And one of the statistics there that I thought was kind of interesting was that boys are essentially half as likely to respond or to report incidents of sexual harassment as girls are. Do you have a theory behind that?
Yeah, well, one thing that people ask me all the time is, how do we get boys and men involved in ending gender-based violence? And I always tell them they are involved because gay men are harassed based on their sexuality, bisexual and trans men, the same thing. So this isn't an issue of, you know, women and girls are being affected and no one else is. This is an issue that addresses a whole spectrum of gender-based violence. I think that because certain gender norms of masculinity, you know, boys hold it in, or boys sort of feel like that's what's expected of them. And so if it makes them uncomfortable, they feel like it's an internal problem of theirs. And instead of that, this is a social and cultural problem.
And there are fears too. There may be fears of, for girls and for boys, of physical retribution or social
sure.
ostracization.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of peer pressure to deal with things on an individual basis. I mean, particularly in the communities GGE works in, where certain institutions like police, like the criminal justice system, have not been friends to people who are living in these neighborhoods.
GGE is Girls for Gender Equity. I'm speaking with Mandy Van Dieven, who's been working with this group and for this group for a while. We only got a couple minutes left. I wanted you to let me know and let the listener know what advice you have for girls or boys who are feeling that they've been sexually harassed. What should they do?
Well, first of all, I would say whatever makes them feel the most safe. We certainly do not recommend that if someone is in an unsafe situation that they try to intervene in a way that would lead to more violence. So trust your gut, go with your instincts. Secondly, in the public school system, because this is a federal law, find out who your Title IX coordinator is. Find out who's responsible for the Title IX policy and the sexual harassment policy in your school, because you have to know that in order to know how you can respond in a way that keeps you the most safe.
And for parents, what advice would you give them?
The same thing, and also to ask your children what is going on in their school. I mean, this is something that it's sort of cliche, right, how often people say this, but it really is true that when parents are informed, they're much more empowered to take action.
And I would think the schools would want to take action, too, if for no other reason not to be sued. I mean, there are certain liabilities there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, how do you contact, how should someone contact Girls for Gender Equity?
They have a website. It's www.ggenyc.org. They can also look at heyshortyontheroad.com, which is the website for the book, so you can see what the tour dates are and how to get in touch with the authors and the young women at Girls for Gender Equity.
Terrific. I want to thank you so much for being my guest today, Mandy Van Dieven. It's been a real pleasure getting to know you a little bit.
Thank you so much.
Again, the website is ggenyc.org, and I'll be back next week with another guest on Progressive Radio.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.